Welcome to a podcast from the Center for Emerging Media. I'm Mark Steiner. As we continue our conversations with people who are involved with the production of The Wire, the hit HBO series that aired its series finale on March the 9th, we're going to talk with someone whose name fans probably don't know, or perhaps they do. She's never had a line in the show, but her contributions have been crucial to the success of the series. It's Nina Noble, executive producer. Now, most people don't have a clue to what a producer does. Maybe they assume the executive producer is the slick guy in a suit who lines up all the money but never sets foot on the set. The Wire was known for breaking all kinds of molds, and this case is no different. As executive producer, Nina Noble was involved with the production on a daily basis. She was responsible for everything from getting permission to film on location to remembering characters' backstories. As she prepares to leave the project she's worked on from the beginning, she sat with me to discuss her experiences producing The Wire. Welcome to another CEM production, Center for Emerging Media, and we're talking now with Nina Noble, who's executive producer of The Wire, producer on The Corner. She's worked on Homicide, Basic Instinct, City Slickers, Bull Durham, many, many more, and she's gracing our studios. Nina, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So now this is interesting to me. I've always, something that we all see actors and we talk to writers and creators, but productions don't get done without producers and executive producers who are never seen, and you'll see their name on the screen at the end credits, you know, and Nina Noble is there all the time. So what is it that, for people, I don't think people know, what does an executive producer do? What did you do on The Wire?
You know, I don't know what other executive producers do. Well, you know, let me start by saying this. My before this, I was a producer. My credit was always produced by my dad, who's in the business, was proud of that and has been a big fan of mine, following my career for a while. Mm-hmm. And when I called him and said, you know, I'm now executive producer of the show, and he said, really? He said, that's too bad. I said, how did that happen? And he thought it was a demotion, because in his eyes, and the producer is sort of the one that gets things done, and the executive producer is the one, I guess, in future, sometimes the one who gets the money. The one that puts it together. In television, it's a little bit different. It's the one who runs the show and is normally a writer, like David Simon, sort of writer, producer, creator, overall visionary. In my case, it didn't happen that way, but it's taken Dad a little while to understand that this was actually a good thing.
What did he produce, by the way, as a digression?
So I'm sorry.
Who was your dad?
My dad was a production manager and producer of movies for many years. Oddly enough, was an executive at HBO in the 70s.
That's
for a couple of years. He was vice president of production, and at Columbia. And now still active in the business. Teaches at the LA Film School, producing production managing. And I was lucky enough last week actually to sit in on one of his classes, which was really fun. The students out there are learning a lot of stuff that I, you know, only learned by doing it out there. I said, I wish I knew this before I started. He told them that they should always take the sound mixer on location scouts, because they'll always hear things that you don't. That the factory that's making noise, like right across the street, you won't think of that because you're thinking of everything else. Mm-hmm. So basically what happens on The Wire, my job did evolve from when we started, mostly due to the loss of our partner Bob Colesbury, who died at the beginning of season 3. We'd been prepping season 3 and Bob died very suddenly. And David's a big vote of confidence from David and from HBO that they put me in that position of taking over his responsibilities, as well as continuing the ones that I had started with. And at that point, we brought in Joe Chappelle, was a great asset as a director-producer, and he took over Bob's second unit directing duties. We sort of had to reorganize. David said we were two legs of a three-legged table, and it was tough for a while. Really was a tough time for us, you know, as a company and as a, you know, just our relationship, Bob and Dave, and my relationship started on The Corner.
Is that where you met?
Actually,
you actually met on the Homicide, didn't you, before that?
No, well, I actually worked with Bob Colesbury on The Natural, Barry Levinson's movie years and years ago, and I was a production assistant, and Bob was the production manager. It's the first time we met. And then coincidentally, we were put back in touch with each other by HBO on the corner. HBO, Carrie Antholis put us kind of all together. It was an arranged marriage, as they would have said. But an amazing one in that we all, it was a busy show. We all had a lot to do, and we had very little communication with each other. We just sort of all went and did our own thing, and, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, we'd kind of check in and found that we all shared sort of the same sensibilities, and there was very little disagreement about how somebody else was doing things, and just naturally we sort of divided this huge pie, which was the corner, into different different parts, and just did it. But I also have to say, I've done a lot of different types of projects and different types of jobs, and I decided early on that in order to not be bored, my goal was going to be just to learn something new on every job. Mm-hmm. And it was very simple, and whether it was something about my job or something about how somebody else does something. And that has really helped me to, you know, stay interested and not get burnt out, and also made it possible for me to take this huge leap and sort of try to fill Bob's shoes in some way, because Bob and David always sort of kept the door open for whatever you were interested in, and I took the opportunity to, you know, stay late and try to learn new things.
Everybody you talk to who's been on The Wire, and even folks in the corner, and mostly I've talked to writers and actors, for the most part. There is this kind of creative passion that they have about the work because it's so different than you see on television any other place. So somebody who's a producer, executive producer, somebody who does what you do, how much of that world of the creative and the passion of the story itself do you find yourself becoming intimate and involved with?
All of it, except I don't write the scripts. You know, right. The scripts come from David. But what's thrilling and terrifying about my job is that, you know, I get handed a script, you know, every 2 weeks, on The Wire, and then I have to make it happen. Usually I'll try to be involved somewhat in the early story meetings so that I'm aware of what, you know, the whole plot for the season and what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But I don't read all the early drafts, really, just because I wouldn't be able to keep them all in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, so hand the script, you know, maybe a couple days before the crew gets it and the director gets it. And then to figure out how to make it work, what's working, what isn't. I mean, there are notes, you know, that I give at that point that go back and forth. And then we try to execute it.
So to kind of really hone in on it, like, give me some examples of what kind of notes you would give, a scene that maybe pops in your head or a script that maybe stays with you that you know you had to give some notes and there was some back and forth about what you might have to do and what your ideas for changes were.
You know, I try to keep my production notes separate from the creative notes, because in my head I can switch back and forth very easily, but other people sometimes can't quite as easily. Uh-huh. And so, you know, the production notes would be anything from, you know, just location logistics, or, you know, maybe a 3-page scene that's filmed at dusk, and, you know, dusk doesn't last that long. You know, things like that, or things, The Wire, because it's a continuing story, it really required us all to become sort of historians in some way toward, you know, by the end, and just keep all the details in our head. And I always said it meant everyone had to be thinking all the time. And I think that's what got people passionate about it as far as the crew members, is that they really all felt that they really did have a small part of this. Mm-hmm. Everyone really did have to think, and it's why we always had at least a writer, and sometimes writer and producer on the set all the time, which sometimes directors see as an interference, but in our case, it was a huge resource, you know, and that's what we were there for. So sometimes the notes would be about continuity of characters, mm-hmm. of anything, vehicles, of just things that didn't track, things like that. But, you know, I have to say David and his writing staff are very thorough about trying to really keep all the characters true, and trying not to have too much influence outside.
See, in many ways, your job, you were almost like the glue that held it all together. The different parts, and as you had to, you had to look at the entire picture of what was going on.
Yeah, I have a lot of help.
I'm sure you did.
You know, we have a great team of people around from Vince Peranio, our production designer, Alonzo Wilson, costume designer, people that have been with the show from the beginning, and that's the extraordinary thing about this show. When we at the end of season 5, we produced a newspaper. And we, in this newspaper, had sort of the milestones of the show, how many people had been with it. And we listed the crew members who had been with the show since the first day. And this is extraordinary considering that every year we didn't know if we were coming back or not. And it was maybe 4 months, 6 months, 8 months of not knowing. And, you know, people go on with their lives and they take other jobs and they do whatever. But everyone managed to get back, you know, when it was time to come back.
I guess the more I talk to people about this program, The Wire, and especially now talking to you, I mean, it's the rarity of this kind of thing taking place in television, maybe even film, but is pretty profound.
Well, you know what happened? The storyline, I think, sort of was infectious in terms of all of our lives and how we live them. The idea, and I think it's where David and I sort of came together even as early as The Corner, was this idea of, you know, the dignity and worth of every person and every human, which is what he's endeavored to show on the screen, to show the people who normally are not acknowledged, you know. And my awareness after filming in a lot of different places and starting out filming in New York City, where there are actual blocks where you can't film now because the people are burnt out. The film office puts out a list every week of places which are do not film zones.
Really?
And it's because people have come in, film companies have come in and shown totally disregard for the people who live there. And then working in Wilmington, North Carolina, I lived in Wilmington for 12 years and did a lot of filming there and, you know, saw from the other side people coming in from L.A. or wherever, exploiting the town and leaving trash, not paying their bills, doing a lot of things. And I sort of, you know, at some point thought, you know what, this guy who has this flower shop right here that we're shutting down, his business is as important to him as ours is to us. And once you kind of understand that, of course it is, you know. So we've always really tried to be good neighbors where we film. And that's what sort of started, I think there's been a lot of written, there's been a lot of discussions about a lot of the community work that we do. A lot of things we've done, and that's started with that premise that on The Corner we found two neighborhoods basically where we were going to be occupying their streets for a period of 4 months, like repeatedly, every day, every night, shining lights into their windows and
you were going to be there.
Exhaust fumes and everything else. And I kind of thought, you know, we got to do something because we're moving in. You know, we're moving into the neighborhood, so what do we do to be good neighbors? And tried to think about that a little bit. And I think because of some of those types of things, we've asked our crew and cast to do about 200% always. It's not just when you work on The Wire, it's not just that you come and you do your job. You're also asked to, you know, participate in benefits. Our actors during the season have to go to schools and speak. I say have to. I mean, they all did it so willingly and so wonderfully. Chad Coleman, who played Cuddy, started volunteering at a boxing gym here, you know, because he had met some of the kids and wanted to do some work with them. And so when you talk to people on The Wire, it's like there's a sense of mission about this because of the work and the excellence of the writing, but also because of just the family and the culture that we created.
You said you lived in Wilmington, North Carolina for 12 years?
Yeah.
Were you there for 12 years? Were you a producer then?
Assistant director. Started working in New York for many years and spent a couple years in L.A. And then I went to Wilmington on a film and put us up at a nice house on Wrightsville Beach and decided not to leave it. At that point, I felt it was an incredible luxury to live in a small, historic southern town and be able to work on films. And there is a studio there, although for me it was kind of like at that point I was going to be traveling anyway. And so it was a really nice place to live. And there was something nice about not living where you work because it meant you were really kind of off when you were there.
And you all stayed in Baltimore.
Now we've moved to Baltimore because of The Wire. The first season of The Wire, I was commuting to North Carolina every other week, and that didn't work out too well. So we've come up here, and this is a great city. Really like it here. At some point, we had thought, my husband and I, our plan was to move back up to New York once the show was over. And, you know, then sometime last year, we had a conversation. We just said, why? You know?
I mean, Clark Peters has stayed here. At least he's here now. And
yeah.
Sonia's son has decided
exactly.
to stay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a good city. And for those of us that have kids, it's, you know, it's been a good place for them. Sonia's at school for the arts. My son is at school for the arts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do they take? What are they in? Theater or something?
Sophia's an actress, Sonia's daughter. And my son's into set design.
Good programs.
Yeah. Well, I went to Music and Art High School in New York.
Aha.
Counterpart.
Right. The grandmother of all high school for the arts in the country, probably.
Yeah.
Were you in acting? What were you in there?
No, I was there for music. This was all sort of an accident. I never planned to be in this business.
But you enjoy your work. You love your work, don't you?
Oh, I do, yeah. I'm not suited to anything else.
Right.
I mean, this was the only job I could get.
No one else would have you.
No. No, and you know, one thing I always try to... of course, I have a lot of young people that are interested in the business, and I enjoy talking to them about it. And the one thing I always bring up is, you know, what I like about the business first is I like to go to work at a different time in a different place every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you don't like that and if you can't deal with sort of the uncertainty of the work, you know, you might want to think again, because there's a lifestyle that goes along with this that's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm. There's an uncertainty to that lifestyle.
Yes, and there's unusual hours, and there's just a lot of that.
Because you had to pull 12, 14 hour days or more sometimes.
At least,
at
least.
When you're in the middle of production.
Yeah.
So what? That's an interesting question. I mean, why? See, I always hear people wonder about this. Why it takes so long on sets? Why does it take forever to do a scene and do a production like this?
Oh gosh, well, on The Wire, it's because our. Well, our scripts are very dense. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot going on, and it got more so. There were more balls in the air, more worlds that we were juggling as we went along. I mean, at the beginning, we had the first season, we had the cops, and we had, you know, the Barksdales, the drug guys, you know. And then the drug guys, originally the premise was that each season the policemen would stay the same and everything would change around them, and that it was the case that would sort of propel you into this new world. And but the Barksdales were so captivating that they were kept on season two, and then we also added The Port and the story of the loss of work in America and the blue collar story.
I love that season. I really do love that. That was a great season.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, now that's, you know, that's an example. I got this season two, we had a meeting, you know, with the writers and Bob and I. They said, okay, we're going to do the story of the Port of Baltimore. Okay. So what that means for me is I have to make some friends over there at the port and get permission to film there. And so this was the first time for David, I think, that he was dealing with a story that involved not just abandoned row houses and places where you could basically just walk in and film. So I wrote a nice letter to the ports, and I said, you know, we're doing this story. We want to come down there and film. And I got a very nice letter back and said, no, thanks.
Then what did you do?
Okay, so so then we decided, we realized that we wouldn't be able to film at the port continuously because it's a working operation, but the goal was to do a little bit of filming there, and this was Vince Peranio's idea, also our production designer, to find a place that we could control and sort of marry the two. So we built, Frank Sabatka had a container office. And we built that on stage, the interior of the container. We then rented a unused place at South Locust Point and built our own container village, bought all the used containers and hired somebody to move them around and made our little container village. But we still really needed the working port. We needed the cranes. We needed to see everything kind of moving. And by renting that space, I then became a member of the tenants committee of the Port of Baltimore, a private sector tenants committee, which had meetings every month. So I started to go to these meetings, you know, and try to get to know people. And I, and you know, to me, it's the same whether you're working in the ghetto or you're working at the port. It's to try to communicate with people on a human level and sort of shed all of your impressions of who they are because of what they look like or where they've come from. And so I went in there, and the discussion was all about security because it was right around the time when the Homeland Security Administration was being formed. The regulations were changing there from one day to the next. And those guys, they really did have a problem. And I also had concerns about security in my own business, and I also had concerns about getting the work done and getting it done on time because that's what we get paid for, and that's also what they get paid for. And some of the issues that we were raising in the wire about dredging, about the getting the grain elevator working again, were important issues to them. Because really, there's no reason to travel all the way up the Chesapeake to unload a ship in Baltimore, except that they're the most efficient and the quickest. And that's, you can save money by coming here as opposed to going to Norfolk. But anyway, so in having all these meetings, we did find some common ground, just sort of, you know, as businessmen, you know, and eventually were able to gain the confidence of some folks there, in spite of the storyline. I think in the end, they felt that we had put an identity on their business, on their industry, that wasn't there before. Nobody knows what happens at ports. I mean, we know about airports and we know about trains, but the port is not something that the average consumer uses every day. So we were able to film there on a limited basis, and it really came out quite well. When you see everything moving, and then you're into the container village with Sabatka, and it's really seamless. And we just had to work really quickly because it was, you know, we had 2 hours or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so we got that done, and then at that point, David said, "Well, that's really great, but you know, wouldn't it be great if we could film on board one of the ships that came in?" And so that was my goal all season, was to get permission to film
on a ship.
On a ship, and it happened.
You got it.
The last episode.
So the work that you do, especially let's say on The Wire, is pretty intense work. What's it like for you to do that? I mean, I can just imagine the kind of intensity of a day for you.
By now, I sort of know it's going to turn out all right. You know, so
a little wisdom with time.
Yeah,
that's good. I mean, because I can, and also it's kind of separating that out. You've got family, husband, kids. I mean, that's juggling all that together. It must be a pretty intense work.
I start early. Early. A friend came to visit for the weekend. She said, "Gee, you're so organized." And I said, "You know, but that's not a character trait. That's just a require. You know, it's a necessity. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just start early and kind of figure everything out. I have a good skill. I can usually during the season, I'm dreaming. I dream about work every night, about the next day, and I kind of solve all the problems. So that's
great.
When I wake up, I sort of know.
You're literally dreaming about them.
Yeah, if there's something I'm not sure how to deal with or how it's going to work out. Yeah, by the time I wake up, I pretty much know. But the other bad habit I have is, you know, in the shower in the morning, I have a lot of ideas, and it's usually, you know, things like maybe we should have an exhibit at the Museum of Industry, you know, things that you know, require a lot of work for other people, pretty much. Because I'll come in and I'll say, "You know what I thought of? I have this great idea. Why don't we, you know, in addition to producing the show, why don't we produce a gala, a benefit for Parks and People? You know, why not?" So, you know, there's a lot of people that think I'm crazy.
I think that my producers are now understanding that I'm not the only person who does that to people. It's a good thing. I'm glad you're doing this now. They need to hear this. On a smaller scale.
But these are things when I was an assistant director on the set, I also, you know, would just try to amuse myself in some way. We did one show early on. It was a television movie, and I convinced the producer that rather than spend the money on the wrap party, that we would all switch jobs for one shot. First shot after lunch, no matter what shot it is, we're just all going to trade jobs. And people still talk about that to this day because, you know, I had to pull focus, and I decided that's the hardest job on the set.
And what is that job? What is pull focus mean?
The first assistant cameraman, the one that has to make sure the shot is in focus.
Oh, so that how that, I had no idea how that works.
The person that stands on the side of the camera and he's turning that little dial.
Uh-huh.
That's what he's doing. That's a hard job, and everybody sees your work. I mean, it's apparent, you know, in dailies if you got it wrong.
That's wild.
You know.
So the moving parts you have to deal with is amazing. I mean, what you're just talking about right now.
Right. And that's why it was such a huge benefit for me being an assistant director and spending the time on the sets. And I also used to visit a lot of people when I was off. I'd go visit friends on sets that did different jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, that's where I sort of got this idea that everyone on a movie set has a very different perspective. And they... It's they get very, very much focused on a singular thing, you know, which is their thing and their responsibility for the show. And so I've never been intimidated by, you know, helping people to prioritize.
Uh-huh. Because you understand it. You work at Seton from their perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And they understand that I'm going to help them to balance that with everything else, all the other demands.
So the relationship now you have, you also worked on Generation Kill. David Ned's latest work that comes out in July.
Yes. Generation Kill is an amazing story based on the book by Evan Wright. And Evan was a journalist who spent 6 weeks embedded with a Marine unit, the first ones to invade Iraq.
This is in the first war in Kuwait, or is this in the war now?
Kuwait.
In Kuwait.
Yeah. And I was just captivated by the youth. I think people will be amazed by how young these guys are. And I know David Simon and Ed Burns have talked a lot about sort of the issues surrounding this book. For my part of it, because we were doing The Wire at the same time,
uh-huh.
We had to divide and conquer, which is often our motto. And so Ed really was the guy who was there to protect the story and was there throughout the run. And what I mostly got involved with, I was co-executive producer on this, and mostly I was fascinated with the idea of young actors turning into soldiers, turning into Marines, and mm-hmm. how that was all going to take place. And that was really the challenge for me. The Marines in this story are still alive, they're real people, and so I felt that it was even more important to honor them in some way. I mean, we all felt to get it right and have them credible as Marines and as Americans. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are played by Brits and South Africans and Americans all together, and so we sort of had this boot camp over there.
Literally a boot camp.
A boot camp and rehearsals, where one of the first rules I made was that when you were in uniform, you could only speak American. Because the South Africans tended to want to stay together,
mm-hmm.
and the accent went out the window. But
right.
But they're all great, and it's been a great experience for me to be able to just watch them sort of vicariously through the dailies that I get back and the cuts now that I've been receiving, to watch their characters evolve. And they've absolutely turned into these people. And I think what's so captivating about the show, besides the subject matter, which is really, really interesting, is the camaraderie between the guys and the chemistry.
Mm-hmm. So were you on the set the whole time, or you just stayed there for part of the filming, you said?
Right. I did the initial scouts and the boot camp and rehearsals, and then I had to come back for The Wire.
This was shot in
Namibia
and Mozambique, right?
And South Africa.
And South Africa.
Because the terrain was changing as they were traveling.
Uh-huh.
From desert in Kuwait to the very fertile Euphrates. So we had to find desert and then tropics.
It's an expensive operation.
They tell us it's cheaper to film it over there. I'm not sure if that's true. It remains to be seen.
So the fact that Ed Burns was a Vietnam veteran and had done his own combat, which is an interesting story in its own right, when you get it, had nothing to do with why he was the one at the lead of this.
I wanted to stay here. It was the last season of The Wire, and we knew that. And I just didn't feel it was right to leave at that point. In a perfect world, we would have done each show separately, but for many reasons they had to be done. And I think Ed was the guy. I mean, he had a terrific camaraderie with the guys over there. Ed's such a natural teacher. But really, you know, we've been talking about producing, and for me, you know, the job of a producer is really to be sort of a chameleon. And that's what I try to do, is just see where I can be useful and what I can cover. And so, you know, on Generation Killer, it was one thing, and it was something else on The Wire, and it was, you know, something else on The Corner. And so that's why it's sort of hard to define the job. I think a good producer is someone who can be flexible and just not have a real sense of, well, this is what I do, and that's what I don't do.
Is that this fluidity you're describing in terms of able to move back and forth and do different things as a producer, is that something that on film and television that you do? Is it different doing it on working with people like David Ned on The Wire than it is doing it with somebody else in terms of the flexibility of what you can do as a producer?
Well, of course. I mean, it's because you're filling the gaps. You're seeing what needs to be done, and obviously that has a lot to do with the people you're working with. I mean, on The Wire, the writing is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I always get good scripts, and that's a wonderful thing. And so David and Ed and the rest of the producers don't normally need a lot of help in that area. They don't need me to help them write scripts. Maybe on another show I might have to do that. I don't know. So it's really just about troubleshooting and just seeing where you can be useful and where you can make it better. And I think the thing about The Wire, what excites all of us, you've talked to cast and crew and everyone, we all have the idea of striving for excellence every day. David and I have that feeling, and we hopefully inspire others to feel that way, that every day you come to work and you try to do your best.
Mm-hmm. So what does Nina Noble do with a script? I mean, you don't direct, you're not writing it, you're not telling the actors how to act. So once you have the script in your hands, what do you look for? What do you do with it?
First of all, I have to say, although it's not my passion, I have directed at times when necessary. Uh-huh. I have a director's card. No, I have directed when necessary. I really try not to do any writing, and I have answered actors' questions about their characters when necessary. I really try, again, that's part of being prepared. I really try to be, you know, prepared to cover anything I have to cover, although some things better than others, I'm sure. but really, I try to make it better. When I get a script, I'm looking for obvious things like once in a while, David will name the character the same name as someone who's come before. In fact, we had one case where he named somebody Tay. I think it was Tay in the fifth season. I remembered that we'd had someone with that name in second season, so I had my staff looking for this person to see if he's still alive, still lived in Baltimore, looking for this person. I come to David, and I say, you know, good news, we found Tay. And he was like, what are you talking about? This is a brand new character. So he didn't even realize he had done that. So sometimes we take these things a little bit too seriously as far as the details. But I can give you an example. Season 3, David wrote this terrific storyline of Stringer Bell now becoming a real businessman.
Oh, right. I remember that, yeah.
And he's having a meeting with his staff, and he's following the Robert's Rules of Order, and he has, you know, people have to be recognized by the chair before they can speak, and he's being very proper in the way that he conducts this meeting. And I read this, and I sent a note to David, and I said, you know, this is really terrific, this is great, but you know, what if Shamrock actually had the book? What if he had the book in his hand and he was like looking through this stuff, you know? And so he did. He gave Richard Burton, who played Shamrock, the book, and Richard now was Shamrock became sort of the devotee of the rules, you know, and the arbiter of proper meetings. And so it's, you know, anything from little small details to anything else. I just try to think about
the way you describe it. It seems as if the two of you, at least, maybe you and Ed as well, but you and David have, after all these years of working together, must have developed some kind of rhythm, almost knowing one another and what each other's thinking, and it's a very special relationship to have when you're putting a show together, it seems to me.
There's a lot of intuition on both of our parts. It was a little bit easier when Bob Colesbury was around. The three of us had almost a telepathic relationship, I think, because we didn't see each other very much, but still the work got done somehow between the three of us. And once Bob was gone, and there wasn't a third person to sort of bounce ideas off of. It was funny because David and I had arguments for the first time.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was kind of funny. But, yeah, we're, you know.
So where are you all going now? You and David going to continue to work together? You have new projects on the horizon, or is this too early to talk about?
Absolutely. I think, for myself, I've gotten a little spoiled by working with HBO. I think it'd be very difficult to go work for someone else. They're so smart. I think with the material, and we have a great amount of autonomy that I don't know if we'd have somewhere else.
That's really
in terms of the way we do our work.
The way the people, I've heard this from other people, the way that folks at HBO handle their creative side, the people they bring in to do these stories, whose stories they buy, I mean, it's a different kind of relationship than one would have maybe with ABC or NBC or CBS or...
Yeah, there's a lot of time spent in development at HBO, but then once their shows go, they really give them a chance. I mean, The Wire would have been canceled probably within a couple episodes if we were somewhere else. And they give their shows time to grow, time to find their one or two audience members, time to find a few critics who might say something good about them, you know.
Well, can I say a question? That's a question I know that, well, I talked to David and Ed about this and others, about what it is about a show that, like The Wire, that obviously HBO kept every year. They made a decision, we're going to keep it one more year, that the critics around the country loved, that had powerful acting, powerful writing, cinematography was amazing, all the whole pieces fit together. And what it was that it didn't seem to grab hold of America in terms of viewership?
First, I think it takes a commitment to watch the show. I think the people that appreciate the reasons people appreciate the show is because you have to think about it, you know, and it's thought provoking. Some people don't want to do that. They don't want to. It's an effort, I think. Although it's a pleasure at the same time, it's an effort. I think a lot of people don't have the attention span anymore for shows like this. And I think the fact that we have a black cast is a big issue for a lot of people. The fact that we're in Baltimore is an issue for a lot of people. I don't know.
Well, I think it was socially important and also just kind of wonderful and brave of the folks to take on the show and to go do it. And finally, they actually found a medium that would show it.
Well, for me, yeah, exactly. I think there's someone out there that knows how to fix the school system, you know, someone that maybe is not reading about schools and reading educational journals, but maybe they're watching HBO, you know, maybe they're watching The Wire and it inspires them to be involved in some way in some of these issues, you know. It's wonderful to be able to deliver that.
It must be hard in some ways to see that go. Or were you prepared for it to go now?
Not at all. I mean, the best thing was that David made the decision that this would be our last year and that HBO agreed. And we knew that going in, and everyone knew it, rather than finding out that you're canceled at the last minute.
Right.
So that was great that we were able to prepare, not only through the writing, but, you know, just for everyone's, you know, life to be able to plan that. And I'm not sorry. I mean, this is the longest job I've ever had, which is nice in some ways, but I'm definitely ready for the next thing.
What is the next thing? What are you going to do now? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. We have, David and I are going to continue to work together, and we have several projects, and it's just, you know, whatever script lands on my desk first, or whatever somebody decides to buy first, You know, then we'll dive into that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a lesson. I've learned a great deal. I think so of our people listening to this today. Everyone ever listening to it, learned a great deal about what it takes to really put a production together. Nina Noble, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you here.
Great.
Thank you. You're listening to a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. Engineering assistance from Liz Buckle. And thanks to Clean Cuts, Music, and Sound Design for studio space. To hear more and learn more, visit us on the web at marksteinerblog.wordpress.com, which is Google Mark Steiner Blog. And from the Center for Emerging Media, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.